Tango Tango Papa 1784, October 23rd, 2013.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you from somewhere in Mississippi. I'm in a rest area, and I don't even know if I can pronounce this properly. According to the weather widget on my phone from AccuWeather, it's Bonhomie, Bonhomie. I guess that's how it's pronounced, or maybe Bonhomie, Mississippi. So I'm on my way to deliver a load to Robert. I think it's Robert or Roberts, one of the two. I think maybe it's Roberts, Louisiana, tomorrow evening, tomorrow being Thursday evening. And so... I've still got about 100 and, let me see if I can see the GPS. 100 and, what does that say? I can't quite make it out. 108. So it says 108 miles farther to go from here. One of the problems, it was starting to get dark. It was, well, it had been dark for a while. It was about, I guess I stopped here, it was about, probably 9:30, somewhere in that area, Central Time. And once you get south of Hattiesburg, there are just a couple of truck stops, and there's quite a stretch where there's really probably a lack of truck parking. And so I didn't want to risk kind of getting past the point where I could easily find a place to park the truck. And... because the last 100 miles, at least from what I can tell, there just aren't that many truck stops that have very much truck parking. And at this time of night, things really start to fill up. So I just went ahead and stopped at this. There's a truck. It's not even really a rest area. It's just a sort of a parking area. And there were already quite a few trucks in here, but there was a place for me to park, and so I parked here, and I'll just take my break here. Now, the load doesn't deliver until, 9 or 7 something, so I'll have to time it so that I get there around 6:30, so I'll leave here sometime tomorrow afternoon, and probably I'll stop and get something to eat, and... try to time it so that I get there about an hour before the appointment time. So I need to get there by about 6:30. The actual appointment time, I think, is 7:30. I'll have to check that to be sure. So, in any case, originally they had the load. It was scheduled to deliver this afternoon, and that just didn't work. Because of when I picked it up yesterday, I don't know, it was actually early yesterday afternoon, and it was like 1,000 miles with the deadhead from where I'd unloaded at. It was 1,000 miles from there to the, because it was like 70-something miles for the deadhead, and then around 925 from... where I picked the load up at there in Ohio to Roberts, Louisiana. And so that too many miles and not enough time. So they went ahead and rescheduled it, and apparently they couldn't get it. They couldn't reschedule, it ended up being rescheduled the next day, which now that's tomorrow. But it was later in the evening as opposed to an earlier appointment, which is fine. I have no problem with that. In any case, I've got some more comments, podcast comments, from several different people that I'm going to play. And so have that, and let me see. I made myself some notes here. I thought I had those pulled up, but I guess I... Let's see. Okay. Well, I saw a... in my email, you know, there's this the Blaze website, and that's Glenn Beck's news site. And there was this article on there about decline. You know, someone's written a book about declining church attendance, and what you know, it seems church attendance seems to be in steady, you know, kind of a steady decline, and what churches could possibly do to change that. And I can tell you, I don't know how they're looking at it, but I can tell you from my perspective that, of course, the tremendous decline, particularly in the United States, but I think, we'll just talk about the United States. The tremendous decline in our morals has been caused deliberately through the school system. And it's been going on for years and years and years. Once they were able to nationalize the public school system, because it used to all be private, once they were able to nationalize it, they began systematically kind of corrupting the morals of each succeeding generation. They corrupted them more and more and more. And now it's gotten, you know, it's kind of like you... see any sort of chart where something starts out slowly, but it has a steady rise, and then it goes so far, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have the hockey stick kind of phenomena. And we're on, you know, we've gotten to the, I don't know when, if you'd plot it out, I think we're in the hockey stick. Don't know how long we've been there, but we're in it. And we've been in it for a while. And so what we're seeing, the morals of the, you know, people have been corrupted so much, and it's gotten so dramatic that you've got like a split, and, you know, like a split in the culture. So you still have people that are going to church and what have you, and then you have other people. And I would go into this category. My parents never raised me in the church, and I've always been rather grateful for that, in fact. Because I was able to, I didn't have the you know, the one way or the other, I didn't have it crammed down my throat. And I was able to, I've been able to sort of search truth and think about these things pretty much on my own. And that's out of my own curiosity. And that's really the best way to learn, is out of your own curiosity. If you can learn out of your own curiosity, then it actually means something to you. So, but it's, and I don't know that, the church, you see, is really, church and religion, really, at best, it's a, sort of a spiritual jail to kind of keep, you know, for the criminals to sort of keep them contained. And, you know, I kind of hate to put it that way, but that's really what it sort of is. And so, you know, you have a sort of a cultural Christian type thing, you know, where if you go back and back in time, probably to the earlier part of the 20th century, you probably had a lot more people that were kind of regularly going to church and what have you. And then over the years, that has, you know, it's just declined. But now it's to the point where, you know, this article was talking about, well, the culturally people are different and so on and so forth. And, you know, the church should be more accepting and, you know, and there's the problem right there. You don't really go to church to be accepted. Because if you're going to church, if you go to church and your religion, you're using your religion as a means of acceptance, sort of as a vehicle to, you know, so that you can feel good about yourself and so on and so forth, that is really the wrong reason. And, you know, you may or may not feel better about yourself. But the problem is that if you do, you're sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't. If you kind of end up feeling better about yourself when you go to church, you know, and you kind of do it on a regular basis and you sort of use it as a way of sort of feeling better about yourself, chances are it's kind of like, you know, it's sort of like someone that's depressed, and then they take one of these anti-depression drugs, and it might, they find out that it might help them a little bit, so they don't feel depressed. Well, the problem is that that is sort of like you have a bulge in your tire, and you sort of push it back in, or it's kind of like you have a hole in the floor, and so you cover it up with a rug. It doesn't really solve the problem. The problem continues to grow worse. Now, the other problem on the other side, you know, corrupting people. It's easy to corrupt people. It's pretty easy to actually corrupt people. And if you can get people to, you know, kind of corrupted, and then they need, you know, corrupted people need acceptance. Because if you're corrupted away from your God-given identity, it causes you, sort of part of that, it causes you to need acceptance. And so you're corrupted, and you got your corrupted friends and what have you, and then everybody sort of feels good about each other because, you know, we all kind of rub each other's slimy back. And, and then the churches, of course, tend to be filled with people that they're kind of hypocritical. Not all of them. I'm not saying everybody that goes to church or that's in a church is hypocritical or that's part of a religion, but it's a pretty common thing. And so you end up with, the people that are corrupted can see that. They can see that those people that purport to represent God and morality and so on and so forth, they can see that there's something wrong with it. They can see the flaws of those people, even though those people can't see their own flaws. Of course they can't, because they've got each other to, they're rubbing each other's slimy backs. So it's sort of, you have a corrupted group, you know, two different corrupted groups of people, you know, that are, one of them, they're just openly corrupt, and they're saying, we're just going to be openly corrupt, at least we're more honest. And then you have the people that are corrupted, but they're sort of trying to hide it from themselves or hide it from each other. But, sort of you have the overt people and then the covert people. And so they begin to kind of evolve out of each other and react to each other. So I don't think there is a system. You know, just, you know, because there are people that think, oh, if we can just get more people to go to church, we'll change the morality and so on and so forth. And that's not good enough. It really isn't good enough. The morality, if you want to really find the truth, if you got the desire to find the truth, consider yourself blessed, because you have to have that desire, you know, to really find it. You've got to really want it. As an individual, you have to really want it. It's not something that you're just going to kind of casually run into, and, you know, kind of like you'd run into the, you know, some product in a supermarket and it doesn't work that way. So So anyway, I don't know that I think our culture is corrupted, and you know that we're beyond the point of politics being able to solve it. And at this point, we're going to just have to suffer the consequences of what we, you know, of the moral slime pit that we've fallen into as a nation. So, anyway, I've got a comment that Joel sent in actually a few days ago, and he's talking about the Republicans and the Democrats and the government shutdown and what have you. So let's go ahead and I think that shutdown or so-called shutdown was in progress whenever Joel sent this comment, and I just kind of forgot to play it. I was going to play it in the last podcast, and I kind of forgot about it. So anyway, here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. I'm Lachlan here from Life in Ohio podcast, as well as the Wrestling Tech Show, GearDiary.com, a few other places. My first comment cut out. Oh, well. Here we go. Don't know where I left it off, but this budget impasse thing is an interesting animal here, because I see the liberals and Democrats, you know, complaining about the Republicans doing the exact same thing as if the Republicans were in control. Basically, you know, the Democrats don't think it's okay if the Republicans do something that they know full well that they would do if the tables were turned. You know, it's this whole action where people don't seem to have equal rights if you don't think the way they think. It's, you know, and to go back to not your most current show, but the show before that, the whole adage of, you know, you're okay, I'm okay, and that seems to be where they're at, you know. And they act like that the Republicans have to be infallible. You know, that, you know, hey, if you're going to suggest something, you have to be infallible. Well, the problem is there's no one creature on this earth that's 100% correct 100% of the time. You know, the Bible script.
Let me go ahead and interrupt. I run into that problem pretty frequently. No, I wouldn't say frequently. I shouldn't say frequently, but I do run into the problem from time to time. You know, because here I am in the podcast talking about morality and so on and so forth. And once in a while, I'll have someone come along and kind of launch a little bit of a personal attack. You know, well, you're not perfect. Who are you to say? And so on and so forth. I'm simply making my observations. I'm not perfect. But I'm simply observing what I observe, and I talk about what I observe. And, you know, I'm not, you know, I disarm myself right up front. I am not perfect. And so get that, if you think I'm perfect, you know, kind of get that out of your mind. And I think that's the problem that, you know, maybe churches have, you know, because they, you know, they've got this idea, you know, people will say, well, who are you? You're judging me, you know, because in this article that I was reading on The Blaze, they were, you know, they were thinking that the people in the church were judgmental about, you know, their whatever their lifestyle was. And so this guy that wrote this book was suggesting, well, they should be more accepting of, you know, they did mention homosexuality and so on and so forth, should be more accepting of it, and, you know, this and that, and you know, and that's really the problem is, you know, that people, the problem with the church is that they tend to want to look like they're perfect. And a lot of them try to do that. They'll try to look like they're upstanding, moral members of the community and what have you. And when, in fact, they've got flaws, that are just as bad as the people that, you know, they're kind of maybe looking down their noses at, or at least the people that think, you know, that think they're being looked down at. So, but the Republicans, anyone that holds to any kind of values or expresses any kind of values has this problem. I can come along and just disparage you and, you know, point out all your, you know, how dare you talk about these things, because look at you. Look what a rotten so-and-so you are. How dare you talk about these things? You're not perfect. There was only one perfect person. I've heard that a number of times. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. You know, and so the Republicans should just come out and say, hey, we've got problems. We're flawed, just like everybody else is. But we're talking about ideas. We're not talking about our behavior. We're talking about ideas. And so they, you know, but anyone that has any kind of values or aspires to any sort of moral values or in particular has this problem of, you know, the people on the other side can immediately begin pointing their finger. And then the problem is, if someone starts pointing their finger at you and saying, oh, well, how dare you talk about these things because, you know, you're doing this and you're doing that, the problem that person has is if they've, you know, if you're hiding something from yourself, then when someone comes along that they can see what you're hiding from yourself, you know, it's easy to see other people's flaws. You know, it's very easy. We see, you know, it's easy to see other people's flaws. It's very difficult to see your own. So, but if you're lying to yourself and you're employing your friends around you to sort of lie to you so that you keep the lie going, then, and that's what these Republicans, because they're being sort of manipulated through their own character flaws, and they want to, that's what causes, when you're lying to yourself, that's what causes, you know, causes you to sort of be vulnerable to what other people think about you. So they'll say, well, oh, you're homophobic, or you're Republicans are this, or the Republicans are that. And then they, oh, I'm not that way. Here, I want to prove to you I'm really not that way. But they should make it clear that, hey, I'm not perfect, but I'm talking about these are ideas. These are ideas. These are not, we're not talking about me. We're talking about ideas. And they don't, of course, they don't do, no one does a very good job of that. And so they end up looking like a bunch of buffoons. And then they resent, of course, being called names and having their name dragged through the mud and so on and so forth. And before you know it, they turn into what they hate. They turn into what they resent. And that's how the vast majority of them kind of, maybe they go in there, become a politician with really good intentions. They're going to clean things up. And then before you know it, they've been flipped and they're corrupted and, you know, they've lost their souls. And it's happened over and over again. And then sometimes nowadays it's just absolutely amazing how fast it happens. John Roberts, you know, the Supreme Court guy, justice, he lost his soul. When he said Obamacare was, you know, his vote helped decide that Obamacare was really constitutional when it clearly isn't constitutional. There are other examples of individual senators and congressmen that have lost their souls pretty quickly. I think another one that lost his soul pretty fast was the governor of New Jersey. So, you know, it, some people it happens pretty quickly. They just apply the pressure in the right way and get them, you know, get, they resent, and then that's your Achilles heel. You think it's, you think your resentment is somehow some sort of a protection. You think that, well, you just keep it around because it feels good or whatever to you, the slimy, rotten side of your ego. Well, the problem is that that's actually, it's 180 degrees out of phase with reality, because your resentment can and will be used to destroy you.
Scriptures that you've been using a lot, you know, all who sin are slaves. All right, you know, this is true. You know, when you sin, you become a slave to yourself. In a lot of ways, the liberals, they are that. They're the ones who don't really want conflict. And then when they do get it, they're like, I don't know why they want to do that. So I just find it interesting, you know, that they just seem to think that the Republicans doing what they've been doing it, and they have the power to do that because they're doing it. You know, they think that they're wrong, and they know full well that they would do the same thing. Take care, Tom.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. There really is no cure for it. You can argue with people, and some people are open. Some people you can reason with, but the problem is that if you're open to be reasoned with, it's because you're looking for something. You're looking for the truth. Now, the others on the other side of that, you know, the way to deal with the world, because, you know, there's so many people, their minds are already closed, and they're already in this sort of knee-jerk reaction mode, sort of induced by the wrong side, you know, the wrong side of their ego sort of separates them from their God-given identity. And so therefore, they're sort of in this knee-jerk reaction mode hopelessly, you know, permanently. In many cases, they're permanently locked into that mode, and they'll never get out of it. They'll die in that mode. And so what you have to do as an individual, because you can't change that, but what you can do is change your own reaction to it and learn not to resent them. And you've really got to do that. You know, not only the people in the public eye, but you've got to learn to not resent the people around you, not resent the people and places and things that are in your own life, because any resentment at all can and will be used to further corrupt you, because resentment itself is corruption. It's a corrupting part. It corrupts your soul, and so you can't keep it around. And you can't this idea that, you know, people have this idea that it's a protection. They have an idea that somehow they can, you know, that resentment is a weapon to be used against other people. That somehow, you know, and of course that's an illusion, because you think, oh well, if I resent this person, it's kind of like you're in your own mind. In your own mind, you're hurling the mental thunderbolts and wishing someone dead. And of course that's delusional, because, you know, we are not God. And so resentment is deadly. Even a little bit of it is deadly. So that is the cure. On an individual basis, we have to give up our own, you know, wherever resentment is within us, that's what we have to give up. And that's always what we're protecting. That's always, you know, what drives us to seek the approval of other people. So, you know, we've all got the problem, and but then again, we have to realize we're not perfect, and we have to, you know, just state it. You know, let just come out and say, I'm not perfect. And but you know, we're talking about ideas. We're talking about principles. We're not talking about behaviors per se. You know, so you know, but the people with the behaviors, the people that have been corrupted, for example, like I was talking earlier about the church thing, the people that have been corrupted, particularly younger people, don't seem, you know, they may be searching, but they don't, you know, typically they don't see religion as any sort of a real answer. They see it as some sort of an enemy, you know, and the people that are in it are sort of crazy and judgmental, and that's the way they're looked at. And so, you know, and of course, most of the people that are in the, you know, that are in part of religion, you know, typically they're just kind of hypocrites, and you know, they say one thing and do another, and the two sides have way more in common than they realize. You know, evil doesn't care which side you end up on, really. So it's, I don't know, and that's kind of what drives the conflict. But you know, our government is out of control, and we will never get control back as long as, so, you know, so many of us are out of control ourselves individually. You know, it's kind of like someone that's under a compulsion to, you know, to drink or to do whatever. Say someone's under a compulsion to stick themselves with a pen or something. You know, you name the compulsion, they can't stop. Someone's under compulsion to take drugs, they can't stop. Well, it's when you have a mass of people like that, that's you know, that makes up a large percentage of your society, then the resulting groupthink is going to just be just totally, totally out of control. And there is no, you know, in a sense, politics is sort of, politics sort of arises as a result of corruption, you know, because if in the ideal state, if, you know, human beings should be self-governing and so on and so forth individually, and you know, then if you can kind of, you know, if you can control your own behavior, then you know, your own behavior is under control, then why do you need, you don't need government to control it. But if you're out of control, you have no self-control, then some external force is going to come along and control you, you know, bully you. And that's really what you know, big government is about. It's a giant bully, and you know, and the bully never has enough. The bully never has enough power, you know, and of course, the more you keep giving in to the bully, then it just makes the bully that much worse. And so it turns into a giant bully, and then finally you end up you end up either with some sort of, you know, you're going to have some sort of a dictatorship, or you're going to have a civil war of some sort, or both. And that's what we're headed for. So, but our morals are the problem. You know, it really does go back to that. So, anyway, I've got another comment or from here from Michael Moss. And so let's see what Michael has to say.
Hey, Tom, here's a podcast discussion topic here. If you haven't covered it already. Now that the temporary thing has been put in place to, quote unquote, keep the government open, and the media and the like have talked about how the Republicans backed down somewhat to compromise some of what they wanted, or a lot of what they wanted, to make this happen. And with the prospects of them possibly doing even more, Tom, how do you think that bodes for the Republican Party when it comes to the next couple of elections? Thoughts?
All right. Well, thank you, Michael. I think the Republican Party is, as it has been constituted, I think it's probably a dead party, even though it's probably not going to go away just yet. Personally, I will never give them another dime. But of course, I've completely lost confidence in the political process. You know, we've got wonderful laws, and we've got wonderful, you know, the Constitution and so on and so forth. But the problem is there's too many of us that are corrupted. And I think we're past the point of, we certainly are past, I don't know if we're past the point of no return from a moral standpoint. I don't know that. I can't say that. But I can say, and I do believe, we're past the point, we're well past the point of being able to try to control that through political action. Politics sort of worked. It sort of works. It sort of grinds, but it does sort of work. If you have enough moral people, the political process sort of works that we've had, you know, with the Constitution and so on and so forth. But once you have too many corrupted people that make up the society, it doesn't work anymore, because if you don't have any ethics governing, you know, internally governing you, if you don't have any ethics internally governing you, then it doesn't matter what the law says, doesn't matter what's written on a piece of paper. You know, the Constitution, you know, if you want to think of it this way, the Constitution has to be in your heart. The Constitution has to be governing you already, you know, and if it's governing enough people, you know, because it's just naturally in them, then the political process will work, because they've got self-restraint. If you take that away, then what governs you? If you have no God-given ethics, and what you know, then you're a thief, you're a liar, you're a, you know, reverse all of the Ten Commandments and take them to the, you know, to the most extreme that you can, and that becomes your government. That becomes the groupthink. And that's really hell on earth, isn't it? But politically, I'm not giving anybody a dime. For a while I kept getting these calls on my phone, and if it says unknown, or you know, if that comes up on the caller ID, I don't answer it. Or if it says Washington, D.C., I don't answer it. And usually if I don't, unless I'm expecting a call from somebody, sometimes I'll, you know, like a place where I'm unloading at in particular, you know, or loading, they'll call. They use cell phones these days. I haven't had a CB in years that works. So they'll call. A lot of times they'll take down the number, and then they call and tell you to back into such and such door. And so if I'm expecting a call like that, then I'll answer it. Even if it comes up unknown, I'll still answer it. But if they start into some political spiel, I hang up. You know, but I think a lot of people are, you know, the Republican Party, their fundraising is way down. And I think it's a dead party. You know, but then again, you've got these people that, as the society, as morals deteriorate, you always have people that kind of the scum rises to the top. And that's true with any organization. The scum sort of rises to the top, and you know, the bigger the organization is, the scum sort of rises to the top, and those people somehow think that they're going to take control. They're going to bully these bully the masses around, bully the group, you know. And you know, for the longest time, the Republicans have been sort of baiting and switching. You know, they say, oh, we're in favor of this and we're in favor of that, and we want smaller government and so on and so forth. And then, you know, they get the money and then they do whatever they want to with it. And of course, they want to be part of the big game and the power and so on and so forth. So I think the Republican Party is essentially, you know, it's just it's kind of a dead party at this point. And the real problem is our morals. That's where we've lost. That's the only thing that can reverse this, is if we somehow, you know, and it's going to take a miracle, we would somehow, as a nation, enough of us would have, you know, would want to really find the truth and get our morals back, but and self-restrain and, you know, sort of be self-governing. Because apart from that, all you have is just hell on earth. Because that's, if you have, you basically have whatever's in people's souls. You either have self-restraint and, you know, like an internal constitution, self-restraint, so on and so forth, or you have the opposite of the Ten Commandments. Take it to the extreme. Raping, murdering, pillaging, robbing, so on and so forth, and then that becomes your society. Welcome to hell on earth. So I've got couple of more comments here from this time from Scott, scottpodcast.com. So let's listen to this first one. So here's Scott.
Hey, Tom, now you're telling a story on a different podcast about your frustrations with your folks, which I know you've had for years, and how different their political point of view is than your own. And your opinion, you know, you can't get them to see things straight. You just can't get them to be reasonable, to have the common sense. You can't get them to see logic. And as soon as you use the word logic, then I had to stop and make a note here. Because, you know, the word reasonable, that's a, you know, that varies. Everybody thinks they're reasonable and other people aren't. You know, that's an individual, that's an opinion. Being what is reasonable is an opinion. But when you get to logic, logic has nothing to do with opinion, Tom. Logic is science. And a lot of people don't like that, but I've got to point out here, as I said, I'm very much into science. Science involves using a very specific method to do things. And at times, you've rejected science. You don't believe in science. You don't believe in the conclusions of science in many cases. And you think...
Okay, I think you're talking about the global warming thing, and that's not science. They, you know, the man-made global warming, you know, that's been presented as, well, it's a consensus of certain scientists, and it's pretty clear, if you've paid any attention at all, it's pretty clear that a lot of the so-called evidence was sort of fabricated, or, you know, it was massaged, and the people that had dissenting voices, the scientists that had dissenting voices, were quashed deliberately. You know, and all you have to do in most cases is just threaten to withdraw their government grants, and that has a tendency to get them to shut up and kind of play along. So that the global warming thing is not science. I don't know where you come up with the idea that I don't believe in science. This, as I've said before, the scientific method, there is the theory of it is wonderful. I have no problem with it. The problem, unstop your ears, the problem is people. The problem is because people have a tendency, they're flawed. Even if you call yourself a scientist, you've still got ethical problems. They've still got moral problems. They've still got character problems. They're human beings. They have character problems. And so that introduces the possibility that, and you know, in many cases, it's proven that they are lying for their own gain, or they're lying to kind of go along with the groupthink. So just because I don't believe in the man-made global warming religion doesn't mean that I don't, that I'm rejecting science, or that I, you know, or that I somehow I'm rejecting logic. So it's like a little trick of semantics isn't going to work. I do believe in science. There is such a thing as science and the scientific method and so on and so forth. The problem is that just because I disagree with the global warming, this global warming groupthink, doesn't mean that I'm rejecting the scientific method.
Science is corrupt, and I submit, what's better than science at finding all, you know, science is about using logic. That's exactly what science is about.
But what if the scientists are corrupt? And we've proven that they are. So that many of them are. Not all of them, but many of the scientists are corrupted. So therefore, how do you separate those two out?
Otherwise, it couldn't be science. It would be opinion. It would be ooga booga, religion, whatever you want to call it. It would be things that are completely unscientific. So what are we talking about here? Are we really talking about listening to logic and science, or are we talking about listening to opinions? Because there's only one or the other. You know, you can't have two right answers. You know, that just isn't the case. And science helps you to determine what really is the right answer. And that's the thing. Now, they can't prove or disprove God. And that's the fact. And that would really kill me if they we're able to disprove God, because I want to believe in him. So thank God they can't disprove God, because I wouldn't like that. Short of that, I'm pretty much prepared to believe anything that science can prove, because I've got to, because that's what is real. Otherwise, I'm that person out there who's saying, see the ocean out there, see that edge, that's where you go off of it, because that's what people believed when they didn't have science. So, and I don't believe that it's possible to apply science to politics. I don't believe it's possible to do studies and prove, you know, this politician or that politician is the better, this party or that party is the better.
Well, it's not. And the problem, again, is people. People on the left, people on the right. The problem is people, because the people on the, you know, it's like I was talking about the people in the church and people that, you know, and they're losing their church membership and so on and so forth. You know, those people are just as corrupt in many cases as the people that are, you know, that are just sort of openly saying, well, we're corrupt and we're proud of it. We're corrupt, and at least we're not trying to hide it behind some religious facade. We're corrupt, and we're going to be proud of it. We're going to have a pride march. We're going to have a kill our baby pride march. We're so proud of being corrupted. We're gonna have a march and with, you know, and a parade. Make a parade out of it. That's how corrupt we are. That's how open we are about our corruption. You know, and then on the again, you on the other side, then you have people that are pretending to be one thing, but what they are on the inside, those other people are on the outside. What they are on the inside covertly, those other people are on the outside, overtly. So there's the scientific process, great, not a problem. You know, and science is what it is, and the universe is very orderly. It's incredibly orderly. There's only one thing, as I've said, you know, the universe is very orderly, but there's just one thing that's not. And that's what governs human behavior. That's the one thing that There is no order to, and it's deliberate. It's a deliberate flaw, because that allows us as human beings to find out where sin goes. Sin means to, literally, it means missing the mark. You know, because it would be easy for God to create make a creature that's like a doll, you know, wind up doll. You pull the little string and it says, I love you, I love you, I love you. Well, what good would that be? How would you create love? If you were God, how could you create a creature that could actually, honestly love you? How could you do that? You would have to give that creature the ability to turn his back on you. But then if he turned his back on you, that would be it. So, you know, we're here. This is sort of like a halfway house between heaven and hell, my opinion. This earth is kind of a halfway house between heaven and hell. We're here so we can kind of, we're born into a corrupt system and we become corrupted by that system. We also have a proclivity toward corruption. But we're here so we can experience that, and then we can be saved. If we're so inclined, we can be saved from it. But science itself is very orderly. The universe is perfectly, you know, just amazingly order, is amazingly full of order. Everything is just right, or it would wink out of existence. It's a pretty incredible thing. You start looking at it just from the distance standpoints, the size standpoints. It's mind-boggling. But the problem is, you know, whether it's the church of somebody has made a church out of the Bible, you know, different churches out of the Bible, or if it's the church of atheism that somebody just started some atheist just started their own church the other day, or if it's the church of science, someone wraps themselves in science and says, you know, and I'm a really a good person because I believe in scientific process, and I worship all these scientists, put them up on a pedestal and worship them. I'm a good person. You know, you can wrap yourself in all, you know, you can wrap yourself in the flag and wrap yourself in the Bible and verses and chapters, or you can wrap yourself in, you know, the ideas about science and the scientific process and so on and so forth and all, make it all high sounding. And it doesn't really help you. In the end, how does that make you a better person? It doesn't. So, science, I love science. I love the scientific, the theory of the scientific method. It's brilliant. It really is brilliant.
And so forth. Oh, and by the way, another thing I should mention, this kind of flies into my mind. Comparing statements. You've been saying consistently for some time, and I've applauded it, that there is no political solution, that neither political party is going to help us at all. Then why do you care which political party your mom and dad are on? Why does it bother you so much?
Well, it did. Maybe it did at one time. It doesn't now. Because I've changed. I finally realized that there is no political solution. And so then it kind of becomes irrelevant because, you know, quite frankly, when I sort of, you know, I leaned more towards the Republicans, you know, you could say heavily towards the Republicans. When I did, you could say I had the same problem they did. Yeah, I mean, it was a, you know, they sort of think that somehow that the Democrats are going to, somehow they're going to save them or something, or they're somehow better, you know. And I, you know, of course I was thinking that the, you know, here the Republicans are, they're talking about how, you know, how you should be self-reliant, we want smaller government and so on and so forth, but they were doing, you know, they were saying one thing and doing another. So there is no political solution, whether it's on the left or the right. There really isn't. And so I finally realized that. And it was actually a tremendous relief to realize that. Because the tendency is you think you're going to roll your sleeves up and come up with some, you know, and help maybe kind of put a Band-Aid on the moral problem through politics. It ain't going to happen. It cannot. Cannot. C-A-N-N-O-T. Cannot happen. Not possible.
Must be that you still really don't believe that there's no political solution. Because if you did, it wouldn't even bother you. It would roll off your back like water off a duck's back, would it not? So, I don't think you may have quite gotten there yet. Not to criticize it, but just as a point of observation here, it would seem to me that if there really is no political solution, then it does not matter what political side that your mother and dad are on. It just wouldn't matter. Unless you're somehow saying that the beliefs of your particular political side are the right political beliefs and moral beliefs, and, you know, that if somehow they were right with God, they'd be on that side, or right with their conscience. And, you know, how are you going to be? You know, that's a tough one to prove out, you know. Where does science come into that one? I don't know. But anyway, I just I like to throw things out here for you to gnaw on and think about.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. The it's interesting, you know, people. You know, we all have our flaws, and it is interesting how those flaws, as I said before, it's easy to see someone else's flaws, much more difficult to see your own. But it's interesting how in certain cases, you know, I can see, you know, pure logic, you know, and I've one of the things I'll throw out, and I'll throw it out again, thrown it out a lot of times now, the idea of it's just pure, 100% pure logic. You have people that work producing goods and services, and you have people that don't. And we're getting, for various reasons, we're getting more and more and more of the people that don't. And you look at that as, a, you know, just pure numbers, and we're not talking about, well, they're lazy or whatever, or they're unemployed for whatever reason, or they're retired. We're getting more and more and more people that don't produce anything. They're not producing anything of real value. And so the problem, you know, if you look at that at just from a pure logic standpoint, everyone's standard of living inevitably has to go down. And if you want this, if you want to raise the standard of living, you get every, you know, as many people as possible being as productive as possible, then this, everyone's standard of living goes up. That is pure logic, and that drives my mom insane, and a number of other people. You know, I use that as a litmus test, because it's absolutely pure logic. But it, you know, you throw that out there, and that works as a really good litmus test, because it's some people, it drives them bonkers to hear that, and they'll immediately change the subject, or they'll accuse you of calling people lazy or so on and so forth, and they, you know, go off on all kinds of tangents about how, well, people are unemployed and there's too much machinery, too much mechanism, we want to be Luddites and so on. You know, basically that's what they're saying, that somehow the you know, you become a Luddite. If we'd all become Luddites, then, you know, we'd have, you know, more work or something, you know. You know, and talk about higher, you know, we got to pay higher wages. Everybody will have higher wages, and then the circle of money and so on and so forth that you've said in particular, that really, you know, what is money? It's simply a medium of exchange. Well, what are you exchanging? You're exchanging real world goods and services, real world work effort is what backs money. So therefore, if you want more money in the world, you have to have more production, you need more stuff being produced. So therefore mechanization is a good thing, because then it enables one person to be far more productive than they would otherwise be. So the more that's produced, the better. You know, it's just pure logic, but that's a great litmus test to you know, because some people cannot see that, and they cannot see it, or they won't see it, because it's too threatening.
Okay, I'm in yet another podcast, several podcasts ahead, and you're, again, kind of seeming to go against the whole idea that you keep saying that there's no political solution, but yet you care that there is a political solution. So it's like you say one thing, and then you turn around and say another thing, and I don't understand this. And firstly, we're doing that with your parents, you know, somehow inferring that because they didn't see things your way politically, that there was something wrong. Now, you can say, well, no, I didn't mean politics in that case. Well, the only other thing you could mean was that they are immoral people. Are your parents immoral people? Is that what they're not seeing right? They have bad morality and you're good? Is that what you were saying? Or are you saying that they just don't see eye to eye with you politically, and that's the problem, which, as I say, flies in the face of the idea that there is no political solution? I don't understand that. And now you're talking about the healthcare system and unions being up against it and all of that, and people wanting something for nothing, and I agree with all that. I don't think people get something for nothing, and we're stupid to think that that's going to happen and vote for it and all that. It's not going to happen. You are very, very much so promoting the idea that, you know, those Republicans, they're a better choice than those.
Well, if I was, or you thought I was, right now I'm telling you they're not. They're absolutely not. They're never going to get another dime out of me. And, you know. That's so they're not. They're absolutely not. I think the Republican Party is probably dead. It may take it a while to completely fade out, but I think it's a dead party, and in fact, it deserves to die, because if people are hypocrites, because it's kind of a party of hypocrites, or at least the hypocrites are in charge of it. And it deserves to die. It really does. You know, if I'm a hypocrite, then I deserve the fate that my hypocritical behavior leads to. So now, I'm not a parent, never have been a parent, never will be a parent, but if I was a hypocritical parent, you know, like a hypocrite, the typical hypocritical you know, church going Republican, so on and so forth, that claims to be conservative, but I was hypocritical, or let's just say that I was just a hypocritical Christian, for example, you know, since I was talking about that earlier. Let's say that I was a hypocritical parent, a hypocritical, you know, going to church, sing song, and, you know, on Sundays, and then come back home and then cheat on my wife, or, you know, beat the kids, and, you know, and engage in sort of anti-Ten Commandment sort of behavior in front of those kids, and then go back on Wednesday and then sing song and religiousize and never, you know, pay the preacher to smile at me. I would deserve it when the kids ended up in prison. I would deserve it when the kids ended up not wanting to have a damn thing to do with me. I would deserve it. You know, the kids wouldn't, you know, because they'd be the victims. As the sins of the fathers are visited on a third and fourth generation, saith the Lord. But I would deserve, if I'm a hypocrite, you know, a hypocritical parent, so on and so forth, I would deserve what my hypocrisy led to. So therefore, the Republican Party is mostly hypocrites. So that therefore they deserve to fall apart. Now, of course, the Democrats have their own hypocrisy. They're full of hypocrisy too, and they can't see their hypocrisy either. So the whole country is full of hypocrites. You know, too many. Way too many. And the only thing that can save it is if somehow enough of us turn around morally. And that can only happen, one of the ways that can happen is through suffering. People start to suffer. You know, you're laying in the gutter with and your bones are broken or whatever, and you're laying there in the gutter and broken glass, and you how in the hell did I get here? And you start, all of a sudden, sometimes, a lot of times people will find themselves in the gutter, either literally or figuratively, find themselves in the gutter, and then start, rational thought starts going through their minds, and then they'll start thinking rationally. That can happen. It doesn't always happen. Some people would rather be dead than admit they're wrong. That's the only thing that can turn the country around. But conversely, there are principles. You know, for example, if you spoil your kid, you know, you give your kid, you know, you have, and I don't have, you know, qualify this again. Now listen, I'm not a parent, never have been a parent, never will be a parent. But principle is, if you give your kid, you spoil them, you give them money and you buy them the Xbox and, the iPhones and the PlayStations, and you give them all these things, and you know, you just want them out of your hair, and you have a television in their room, and you just want them out of your hair, and you don't give them the attention, because that's really what they need, is your attention. Then, you know, and you don't teach them how to work. You don't teach them the value of work, and you've sort of robbed them. It's kind of like you've got your own little welfare system going. And you sort of robbed them of their dignity. You've robbed them of their ability. You sort of prevented them from reaching down into themselves, sort of shooting a taproot and finding their God-given identity. You've sort of prevented that from happening. You know, and you've got your own little welfare system going, and you've set them up so that the government welfare system can take right over. You've ruined them. You've crippled them. And that's a principle. You know, it's unfortunate that the Republicans, you know, they talk about these principles, you know, self-governing, and they talk about all these principles, and yet they're complete hypocrites. You know, they don't really mean it. Because you look at people's behavior. Not what they say, but what they do. And I could go on and on. So anyway, let's listen to some more of Scott's comment.
Those Democrats. So there is a political solution. Or isn't there a political solution? I'm so confused. And I don't see it. I see it as, you know, you're trying to have it both ways, and it just doesn't work that way. You know, stick on one track and walk the talk, which means you really can't be upset with your parents, and you really can't be upset with what these, either the Republicans or...
Well, I don't know what podcast this... I've had this comment around for a while, so I don't know how old this was. But there are principles, and so you can't confuse principles with the people, in this case the Republican Party, that purports to hold those principles. You know, so you know, and if you try to mix the two and then because the Republican, you know, let's say you have a Republican, hypocritical Republican, that espouses limited government and self-control and so on and so forth. You know, and you can't just mix that up and say, well, that ruins the entire thing. Because if we want to do that, if we want to go there, then we can do that with Adolf Hitler. You know, National Socialist Party, Nazi, National Socialism. You know, and they had their nationalized health care. The Nazis did. So therefore, look at what Hitler did. You know, he murdered all those people and so on and so forth. Look what the regime did. So therefore, the idea of national health care is horrible because Hitler was involved with it. Hitler did it. It's tinged. It's permanently ruined. So there are principles. And, you know, and then, you know, you have these so-called parties. So the Republican Party, you know, I don't know how, what podcast you were listening to. So at this point, you know, I probably for a long time I've had a tendency to sort of be more sympathetic to Republicans. But that's gone. Now, that I'm still conservative. That's not going to change. Just because you have people that claim to be conservative, but they're really not, that's not going to cause me to run away from conservatism. But at the same time, especially in this environment, you can have someone that's just absolutely conservative that really is genuinely conservative, and they would never be able, even if they were involved in politics, they would never in this kind of climate, in this kind of a corrupted society with a super corrupted moral climate that we're in, they would never be able to do anything. Because at best, someone like that can inspire, you know, like Ronald Reagan could, at the time, he was able to inspire a number of people that already were conservatives. It was within them, and he was able to inspire that and sort of bring it to the forefront in a lot of people. But if it's not present, it's not present. If people are corrupted away from that, then someone like Ronald Reagan would be a threat. You know, just an absolute threat. And, you know, if you have a group of cannibals, who are they going to elect? They're going to elect the cannibal king. They're going to elect somebody that tells them, you know, that eats the most number of people. You know, that's the biggest cannibal of all is who you'd elect. If you're a group of cannibals, that's who you're going to elect. So, anyway, let's listen to some more.
Our Democrats do, because it's all part of the overall immorality problem. It wouldn't even matter which party was doing it. It wouldn't matter if it was a third party. If what you say was true and you truly believed it. Now, getting down to the political solution part, I think, like you're saying, that the Republicans indeed could be the better answer, and they won't. I think, like you, that people should have to work for what they get, and things shouldn't be handed out for free. I think the problem, however, is we can't work for what we get. Your implication that all these people out there are just soaking off the government. Well, if you will, we have to soak off the government, some of us, not me, but, you know, I'm close to it. I've got to soak off the government because they're out of a job, or they are with such a pathetic job that they can't make ends meet. And all of this because we keep sending the good jobs out of the country by free trade and outsourcing. If only the Republicans would vote against free trade bills and vote for things that brought trade back in the country, all of these...
Well, we're being systematically hobbled as a nation in a myriad of different ways. But we are being systematically hobbled. It started, it's been happening, it's been underway for many, many years through the school system, the nationalized public school system. And now that, you know, we're at the hockey stick part of the, you know, of the graph, where it's just gone off the scale. And so, they're deliberately exporting the jobs. You know, they talk out of both sides of their mouth. You know, and so it's happened. It's all been deliberate, and we're being deliberately hobbled, and we're being deliberately turned into, you know, like modern day serfs. So that someone can rule over us. You know, the people that rule over us are able to rule over us, lord it over us, because we're too stupid. And quite frankly, we deserve it, because we don't have any morals. If we don't have any morals, we deserve whatever we get. Sorry. And there is no, you know, they'll talk about, you know, they'll talk about... we need to create jobs, and we'll do this, and we'll do that, and at the same time, you know, they go, you know, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth, and but people end up kind of being placated by it. Or, as in my case, you know, there's a lot of people that thought, you know, we've been raised to think that. You know, politics is the answer. Somehow we'll correct things through political process. Can't correct, because the real problem is morals. The real problem, if we, you know, as I said before, if we have the sort of the Constitution in our, that's really within us, because the Constitution really sort of is kind of, I don't know how perfect it is, but it's sort of an embodiment. You know, if you have, it sort of creates a governing, you know, a sort of a governance, it's sort of a written version of, you know, kind of a, you know, a government that you create out of people that are just generally self-governed. And it only works if you have enough of those kind of people that are generally they have a strong sense of self-governing, and that means they've got a strong sense of morality and so on and so forth, God-given identity. Take that away, you have hell, and there's hell to pay. know, you can have hell on the, you know, the, doesn't matter if you're, you know, the devil doesn't care whether you end up on the left or the right, politically. It doesn't matter. So, anyway, let's listen to some more.
Deficits, all the problems we're having would just melt away in a big way as Americans work their way out of this, which they always can when they're given the ability to do so. But as long as we continue shipping the...
Well, now that's another thing. This idea that we're going to... We've always done it in the past. Well, you're leaving something out. Something's happened in the intervening years. Way more of us are corrupted. Way more of us are spoiled. There's, you know, entire generations have been spoiled. Vast portions of entire generations of Americans have been spoiled. And it's gotten worse from one generation to the next. So those kind of people aren't, you know, even if you give them the opportunity, why would they work? They're not going to work. Are you crazy? You know, that's crazy to, you know, and I've been guilty of thinking that way myself. I did in the past. That, oh, we just, if we're given the right opportunity, we'd come out of it. No, we wouldn't. I'm sorry, but we wouldn't. We've lost our morals. Too many of us have lost our morals. They're gone. Corrupted. You've got vast numbers, millions and millions and millions of people that are spoiled, that just want their welfare. You know, they want their someone else to feed them, basically, like the baby bird, kind of sticking its beak straight up in the nest, waiting for mama to come and put a worm in it. Mama has to work and collect the worms.
The jobs out in ever larger numbers. It's pretty obvious to me where that's going to bring things. And it's also going to empower the Democrats, the party of the gimmies, if you will. So if the Republicans didn't want to be dinosaurs and lose elections the way they've been losing them, because we all, it's really true, they lost because you cannot compete with Santa Claus, as Rush Limbaugh said. They could compete with that. All they'd have to do was do something that was counter to Santa Claus, that really made sense. I've talked with many, many people, and there's few of them that disagree that if we got rid of outsourcing and our jobs could come back here, if we sunsetted jobs that were out of this country and said, you know, as of certain dates, these different agreements we're backing out of, as of other dates, we're going to start passing tax reform that's going to tax companies that outsource jobs so that it won't be lucrative for them, and so they better know this now and just kind of stop doing it. Because in 5 years, it's not going to be very profitable, and this is going to be kind of sunset in, so you get time to adapt. You'd start seeing companies coming back here because they'd be able to compete again on American soil, because they know darn well that the jobs are going to start coming back here.
Well, what you're talking about sounds great. It is never going to happen. And the reason, one of the reasons it's never going to happen is because, you know, you talk about corporations. They're, you know, many of them, in many cases, they're able to, they really are able to buy the favor of the, you know, certain politicians. They're able to do that. And, you know, so it's just, it's not going to happen. And then besides that, where are they going to, you know, you think, oh, we're going to bring the jobs back. Well, who are you going to get to do the job? And I point to the, you know, the industry that I'm in right now, the trucking industry, over-the-road truck drivers. There's a shortage, and there has been, and there still is, there's been a shortage of truck over-the-road truck drivers for years. And there's plenty of people, how many millions of people have graduated from college and they can't get a job? Well, but truck driving would be beneath them, or being a car mechanic would be beneath them somehow. You know, there's a shortage of mechanics. I don't know how big of a shortage, but there is a shortage of mechanics. So, you know, to work on things. So that tells me there's a shortage of truck drivers, and there has been throughout the whole, you know, since 2008, throughout the Obama administration, there's been an ongoing shortage of over-the-road truck drivers. Now, of course, everybody can't drive a truck. I'm not saying that they have to, but there, you know, there's enough people that are on welfare just through fraud that could, but they don't want to because they don't have to. You know, and it's not even really a matter of have to. It's how could it, you know, if I don't know, if you're a self-respecting person, how in the hell could you be on welfare? You know, all things being equal, how could you be on welfare and be a self-respecting person? You know, and be willing to just let other people do the work, and so you can sit there and you can watch your television, and, you know, you got your government check, you know, and you got your government EBT card so that you're not stigmatized by using welfare food stamps. These strange-looking welfare food stamps, you know, you can use a card just like everybody else can to sort of try to take the stigma away. But how could you do that? Rely on other people to support you. How can you do that? I couldn't do it. Even if it's somehow it would be to my advantage to just sit on my ass and do nothing and have somebody else kind of provide for me, I can't do it. Even if it's a hardship to work, I have to work. I'm sorry, but I have to. And it's not because I'm a good person. It's just not in me to be able to rely on other people to take care of me. Especially when I can take care of myself. So there's a lot of people that could be working right now, but they just don't want to. Don't have to. And just making jobs available isn't going to solve that. They're not going to... That's the last thing. A person that wants a... You know, that wants what they want their benefits or whatever, the last thing they want is a real job. There's a lot of people, and I know I've heard this story over and over again, so I know that everybody has. There are plenty of people that end up on unemployment, and the last thing they really want is a job. You know, they'll go on job interviews. Some states will require them to go on job interviews or what. That's the last thing they want. They don't want a job. Are you kidding me?
Because we can compete, and they're going to be one of them. You'd see more jobs. More jobs means more people working, more people paying taxes, more companies paying taxes, deficits going down, everything better. Everything better. And the Republicans could be the champion of that change. But will they? No. Why? Because... Well, there are people who have an interest in keeping these kind of slave wages that we currently pay these people around the world. They get $5 to $20 a day. And, you know, I don't think that's right. They also get to live in environments where there's no controls over the safety of where they work. And you hear all about that in the garment industry and other places where the people are being, you know, companies burn and crash down on the workers because there's no such thing as OSHA in those places. There's also no such thing as an Environment Protection Administration that makes sure that the environment is protected in these countries. They can pollute all they want and the people have to live in that environment. What kind of life is this? You know, if we did nothing else, if we and the other civilized countries of the world that are losing jobs to these places did nothing else, if we just simply, even if we didn't back out of these agreements, let's say we passed a law that said we're granting a Bill of Rights to people outside this country to have a fair wage. And if they do not get this fair wage, then we are not going to be in trade agreements with those countries, and we're going to make sure the products they produce are not viable and are not profitable. And we're going to demand that the people that work in those jobs be treated decently. Well, that's, of course, going to raise the wages of those people to a decent wage, raise the environment they work in, both the pollution and the safety aspects of it, to something that makes sense for people. And I submit, I think we could even perhaps compete with that without even backing out of the free trade agreements. The Republicans could champion every bit of this. But do they? No. Why? Again, as I said, there's an interest there, not just Republicans, but Democrats too, in keeping it this way, because big money, it's cheaper. This is what they want. It's all about the money. It's not about people. It's not about this sort of thing. Well, that's the political solution I seek. You may not see it that way. I know you don't. And a lot of people may not. But that's what I'd like to see happen. And I think the Republican Party could be the party that championed working, as opposed to being a gimme, as opposed to leeching off the government. I don't like it either, but I can see a way around it. And I don't see anybody talking about this. So that's all I'll say.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. You're at one point there, you're talking about, us people in civilized countries. Well, don't worry, we're in the process of de-civilizing. It really is about morality. It really is about having enough individuals with self-control. And if you don't have the self-control, you're a slave. If you don't have self-control, nature abhors a vacuum. That's a scientific principle. Nature abhors a vacuum. And it's a spiritual principle. Nature abhors a vacuum. So therefore, if you don't have self-control, if you don't really have any self-control, then something is going to come along and control you from the outside. A bully is going to come along and control you from the outside. And it's all going to turn in, we're de-civilizing. We're in the process of being sort of de-civilized, or we kind of help the process along because lack of willingness to really look at ourselves. We have a lack of willingness or desire for self-examination. So therefore, we're all who sin are slaves, and we're subject to these forces. And so the forces, rule the roost. You end up with hell on earth. And so that's where we're headed. And I don't know that what can stop it. There is no political process that's going to stop it. You were just talking about, we would not buy from these countries or whatever. That's kind of like if you scale that down and you say, well, you have this bum on the street and he's not making, he's collecting cans, soda cans out of the garbage can. We don't like having those people. So therefore, we're going to make it against the law for them to, to be able to sell their soda cans, because they're not making a living wage. So therefore, we're going to ban their economic activity. And that's sort of what you'd do with a third world country. You'd say, well, those people are being exploited and they're not living up to our standards, so therefore we're not going to buy anything from them. That doesn't really kind of make any sense. But it's, I don't know. There is, the only solution is morals, and I don't see it happening on a mass scale. I'm not saying that it can't happen on a mass scale, because it has in the past. But we're destined, especially the people, you know, us that are already alive, we're sort of destined to live our lives in this kind of increasingly chaotic mess. So therefore, the real, it really comes down to how do you live in an increasingly chaotic world yet maintain your sanity? And it is very possible. It's quite possible to maintain your own sanity. It really is. It sort of depends on you as an individual. But as far as straightening the whole society out, you know, I hold very little hope for that. If that happens, it's going to be a complete miracle. So, anyhow, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. Hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.
Yeah.